Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This November, on Election Day, more states than ever will vote in ballot initiatives on whether or not to ease restrictions around marijuana. Five states, including the largest in the country, California, will consider fully legalizing recreational marijuana. Four more states will vote on legalizing medical marijuana. This hour on Point, we'll look at pot's big year in the state ballots across the country and how legalization has played out in the four states and District of Columbia where it's already legal. You can join us on air or online. Where this conversation is always on, is marijuana on the ballot in your state? How are you voting and why? Is it about individual rights, about criminal justice, about health, about safety? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Pot is having a very big year on the ballots. Elected officials commenting in all kinds of different ways about it. In Massachusetts, where I'm sitting now, well, kind of wall-to-wall no from some of those at the top. Here's an ad put out by the Campaign for a Safe and Healthy Massachusetts urging a no vote on the legalization of marijuana in November. You'll hear the voices of the Commonwealth's government, Governor Charlie Baker, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, and Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins.
This ballot proposal is not just about allowing adults to use marijuana in the privacy of their own homes.
It's about the edibles. That's what this is all about, and this is going to be targeted at young people, and we already have, our young people already have enough challenges.
These young people do not need easier access to controlled substances.
All of that is argued, and we'll hear that argument right here today. On the other coast, California, here's ABC 7 last month asking California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom about his support of marijuana legalization. Newsom said he sees it as a social justice issue.
You don't particularly like marijuana.
Yeah.
Why is it a good idea to legalize it?
I don't think you have to be pro-marijuana to be anti-prohibition. People like me, and I think millions of others out there, believe that the war on drugs has been an abject failure. It's been disproportionately a war that's been waged against people of color and poor folks.
And here's the Nevada Attorney General, where it's also on the ballot. Adam Laxalt explaining why he's against the ballot measure for legalizing marijuana in his state.
My biggest concern is the safety and health of all Nevadans. This ballot initiative was written by major marijuana interests that their biggest concern is making money.
The business angle, and of course it is there. We're going to look at this nationally. Lots of states where marijuana is in play. Joining me today from Grand Forks, North Dakota, is Christopher Ingram, reporter for the Washington Post covering politics and drug policy. Christopher Ingram, welcome to On Point. Thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Have we ever seen a wave of ballot initiatives as big as this on marijuana? I guess not.
No, we haven't. The closest I can think of is 2012, when there were a number of medical and legal ballot initiatives in play. But this is definitely the biggest year so far. As you mentioned, there are five states that are voting on whether or not to legalize recreational marijuana, four more considering medical. The big elephant in the room really is California. It's the largest state in the nation. It's the world's sixth largest economy. If marijuana becomes legal there, it'll be really hard for, I think, lawmakers in other states and other countries to kind of keep turning a sort of blind die and let's see how this plays out perspective. It'll really change the playing field, I think.
How did these initiatives get on the ballot in these five states, or nine states in total? Who's been pushing for popular vote?
Well, and so that you alluded to, the first interesting thing is that these are all ballot initiatives. No legislatures so far have really wanted to tackle this at the lawmaking level. Every state where marijuana has been legalized, and in most states where it's been approved for medical use, this is all coming from ballot initiatives from the people, and from people supported by groups, drug reform groups like the Marijuana Policy Project and the Drug Policy Alliance, who want to see marijuana legalized. They see it as either a social justice issue or as a public health issue or as an individual rights issue. So it's really being driven by grassroots support, but that's being supported financially by these drug policy reform groups. And as you alluded to, there's a burgeoning, very young, very small, but industry and business interests who kind of want to get a foot in on the ground floor of this.
For the five who are looking to legalize recreational pot, which is sort of broadly just called legalization, period,
Is there a model, a cookie cutter model for how they would do that? Do the initiatives call for more or less the same kind of legalization? Can you give us a sense of whether there are big differences, or is sort of a path, maybe the path that Colorado, Washington, Oregon, more already on?
Yeah, there are. When it comes to full legalization, there aren't a whole lot of differences in the individual ballot measures. You see a lot of difference in medical marijuana. You know, some states are very permissive, others very restrictive. But when it comes to recreational legalization, it's more or less the same. You're basically setting up a commercial system regulated by the state. You're gonna have a number of places where people can go to buy it. Usually, most states are allowing or considering allowing people to grow a certain quantity at home. So it's really kind of a cookie cutter approach, which is really interesting because the debate kind of plays out as this black and white. Either it's prohibition or commercial legal marijuana, when in reality there are a whole lot of different policy areas in between there. You could just legalize it for personal use but not have shops. You could have government-run co-ops if you want to get the commercialization aspect out of there. But we're not seeing that, and that's partially because in order for those more complicated middle ground approaches to happen, you would have to have involvement from state legislatures, and they just don't want to touch this.
So the profile is, if it's pretty much a standard model, what does it look like when these states are calling for recreational legalization?
Well, you'll have a certain number of shops, of storefronts where you can go in and buy marijuana. It's usually, I believe it's exclusively only for people 21 and over. They're very closely following the alcohol model on that. There are typically certain restrictions on advertising. You can't advertise in places where a lot of kids are going to see it. Some states, they have, you know, restrictions on how close a dispensary can be to a school or what have you. And they usually allow a certain number of plants, usually 4 to 6 plants, for people to just grow at home. If you don't want to deal with the market and just want to grow some plants in your garden, you'll be able to do this under most of these measures.
Edibles, how does that come in? Does the form of the marijuana get addressed in these ballot initiatives?
As far as I'm aware, no, none of the initiatives are explicitly outlawing edibles. There are various restrictions on regulations around them, and that's become a really sticky issue in Colorado. And as we heard at the top of the hour, that's become a real big advertising point for opponents of this.
Why?
Colorado had a really hard time regulating these. And initially, there were just businesses selling edibles and, you know, without any kind of labeling. And, you know, the fear is that you'll have these marijuana brownies versus regular brownies sitting out on the counter. You're not going to know the difference. Your kid's going to walk up and eat 5 of them and go to the hospital. Yeah. So Colorado has really been cracking down on that. They've put in some place some stringent labeling requirements and sizing requirements on edible products. So those are all coming into place in the next year or so. And so other states are grappling with how they're going to follow suit on that. And that's been a really big sticking point for a lot of the opponents on this.
What do the odds look like for passage in these 5 states that are looking at recreational marijuana legalization? California, Nevada, Arizona, Massachusetts, Maine.
California and Nevada probably have the best chance of passage. California particularly, just because it has already a really big existing medical marijuana market. Nevada, the polls look pretty good for legalizers there as well. And the other states, it's really kind of a toss-up. Massachusetts and Maine are kind of a toss-up, which is interesting because when you consider the politics in Massachusetts, very liberal state. Similarly, in Maine, more of a libertarian streak, but it's showing, you know, there's a slight edge for legalizers at this moment. And then Arizona, the latest polls showed a majority support there too, but these ballot measures are really tricky to poll, and people tend to break for the status quo if it's really close. So come November, if it's really close, the odds are what's going to happen is that people will vote to keep the current system in place and not to make any drastic changes like legalizing marijuana. So legalizers are ahead in all the states, but their polls are very close. Even in California, it's close enough to go either way.
Christopher, if these should pass in 5 or 6 or 8 or 9, including California, biggest state in the country, what happens with the tension between state law and federal law? They do not exactly align here, do they?
No, not at all. As far as the federal government is concerned, marijuana is completely legal for all uses, medical and otherwise. And there's just a huge tension there. And we keep seeing this over and over again. And we've seen this for a long time already in California. California legalized medical marijuana back in the 90s. And since then, there have been all sorts of problems with, state legal dispensaries and growing outfits getting raided by federal authorities. There have been been efforts in Congress to crack down on that, but it's beginning to become really untenable, particularly when you have so many new businesses entering the market if some of these states legalize. So it's the industry is facing some really big challenges too, because under federal law they can't file for tax breaks, they can't access the banking system, so they're really being hampered. And so if you see a market the size of California get into this, you're going to start to see really heavy pressure on Congress to at least make some minor amendments to those federal laws to just kind of resolve those conflicts.
Who is opposing these ballot initiatives? I've read in some cases that part of the opposition comes from pharmaceutical companies, including makers of painkillers, which have been a big problem, of course, in this country, the abuse of painkillers.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a lot of people. Some people just oppose it on public health grounds, particularly in the Northeast. You have the lawmakers are just really kind of against legalization. But in other states like California and Arizona, we're seeing alcohol, the alcohol industry, and the pharmaceutical industry get really against this. One of the interesting ones you alluded to is the pharmaceutical company Insys is basically backing the Arizona anti-legalization campaign. They gave them a huge donation of money.
Who are they?
They are one of the makers of the drug fentanyl, which you might know is a powerful painkiller. It's been implicated in a lot of deaths.
The death of Prince, I think there was some implication.
That's right? Correct, yes. And this company is, they're under multiple state and federal investigations for kind of aggressively pushing this at the height of the opioid epidemic. They also happen to be developing their own drug, their own custom drug based on compounds in marijuana. So the calculation for them is that, you know, legal marijuana could directly cut into their business interests. So they have donated, I believe it was $500,000 to the group opposing legalization in Arizona.
We're going to go to Colorado in just a moment and see what the outcome has been there several years now after legalization. I guess the pharmaceutical company's sense is that this could hit their bottom line if marijuana is widely available.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, the other tricky thing is some studies have shown that in states with medical marijuana, opioid overdose deaths and prescription rates are way down. So a lot of people are saying, look, you know, if marijuana is legalized and people just start self-medicating the chronic pain with marijuana use, that's going to take a big chunk out of pharmaceutical industry profits.
And then, of course, there's alcohol, which must be looking over at this as well. What, you know, if it's legal, what's it going to be, a six-pack of Bud or an ounce of pot? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We are talking this hour about marijuana on the ballot in 9 states next month in November, 4 for medical use, 5 for full recreational legalization. And the latest battle lines we're looking at here today in the push for pot. Christopher Ingram is with us. He's with us today from Grand Forks, North Dakota, Washington Post reporter who's covering all of this. You can join us as well. Is pot already legal in your state? How is that working out? Is legal marijuana good for the country, for its health, its happiness, its liberty, its safety, its vibrance and vigor? And is this about fairness? Should marijuana be treated the same as alcohol, as cigarettes? Is it about public health? Is marijuana a net good? Going to go to Colorado in just a moment, but let's listen to the sound of how this is being fought out around the country. Here's an ad launched in September by the Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol campaign in Arizona. It's a campaign sponsored by the Marijuana Policy Project, pro-legalization group. And in the ad, a daughter is trying to explain to her mother why she chose to consume marijuana over alcohol.
Dear Mom, when I was in college, I used to drink a lot. It was kind of crazy. But now that I'm older, I prefer to use marijuana. It's less harmful to my body, I don't get hungover, and honestly, I feel safer around marijuana users. I hope this makes sense, but if not, let's talk. I love you.
An ad for legalization in Arizona. Booze or pot? She chooses pot. There's also the medical marijuana argument out there. Diane Hamilton, a resident in El Dorado, Arkansas, where medical marijuana is on the ballot, said her sister has cancer and could benefit from the medical marijuana, supports legalization on the ballot measure. Talked to the NBC affiliate KTVE this summer.
If I would have to vote, I would have to say that I would vote pro, just because there is so many people out in the world, well, here in Arkansas even, that need it.
Not everybody loves it, and some of the people where it's already legal don't love it. The town of Pueblo, Colorado, is considered repealing marijuana legalization at a local level. Here's Charlene Graham, Pueblo resident, member of Citizens for a Healthy Pueblo, talking with KKTV 11 about why she does not want legalized marijuana in her town.
I think it has not made our community better. I think it has made it very different with the homelessness, the people on the street corners, the emergency rooms having to deal with so many overdoses and psychosis.
We will look at the arguments for and against this fall in just a moment, but I want to pay closer attention to the arena where it's already been legalized: Alaska, District of Columbia, Washington, Oregon, and of course, Colorado. Christopher Ingram, stand by for a moment in North Dakota. Alicia Wallace joins us right now, reporter for the Denver Post, covering marijuana business and policy. Alicia, thank you very much for being with us from Denver.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Is there a consensus on how this has played out since Colorado legalized marijuana in 2012?
Consensus? Well, you know, some of the most recent data have shown that some people are still in favor of the passage of recreational cannabis here in the state. However, as you mentioned, Pueblo and other cities, there are some folks who are not pleased with how this is going, and there are some folks who are still waiting on the sidelines to see how this plays out here.
I mean, it's been legal and recreational. We've heard so much about it, all the business that has moved in, all the products that are available in Colorado at this point. Has it changed the landscape of Colorado? If you look at a strip mall or just around Colorado, are the pot shops visibly part of your economy now, Alicia?
It depends where you are. In Denver, if you're driving along South Broadway or even some places downtown, yes, it's visible. You could see these retail shops with, it used to be before the passage of adult use, you see a green cross, and that's for the medical dispensaries. But they kind of fit in like any other business, just because there are some strict regulations on advertisements and signage here. But it is present. I know that there were a lot of fears and concerns kind of along the reefer madness phase early on about you're going to see a lot of folks strung out on the street. There's going to be violence, and there hasn't. It's not to that that whole dire. Prediction hasn't played out here.
What about culturally, Alicia? I mean, you're living there in Colorado society and culture now. Has it changed that when you go to parties where there might have been a cooler with, you know, beer and a couple bottles of wine? Is there pot out as well now? How wide has the acceptance become?
Well, I'm a few years out from college, so I can't speak to what may be happening up at CU or other places.
I'm not thinking just of college, Alicia.
Well, you know, in terms of concerts, yes, I've noticed over the years that it's become a little bit more. You've seen more folks use it there. But what's been interesting is the means of use. Not everybody is just smoking a joint. There's vaping. There's edibles. There's other means of consumption that it's a little bit easier for people to use in public spaces, even though it is illegal to use it in public spaces here in Colorado.
Alicia, stand by there in Denver. Christopher Ingram, you're listening in North Dakota, but you've reported on this all over the place. What's your sense in the states where this is already legal? Again, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Alaska, District of Columbia. What's most controversial? What's been easiest?
Well, I think on both sides of the argument, there's a tendency to overstate the effects of legalization. I think for the average person, if marijuana is legalized in your state, and, you know, unless you're a marijuana consumer, unless you go out and buy it yourself, you're not going to notice much difference. The other thing to note is that it's still really, really early. A lot of the, you know, people who are opposed to legalization warn of a lot of dire consequences. Some of those consequences may not make themselves known for another 5 or 6 years or so. What we can say is that but the preliminary data so far, there's basically no change. There's, you know, the trends that were in place before legalization, they seem to be holding steady after legalization too. There are, of course, you know, you have more cases now of, you know, people in Colorado, particularly, I think, visitors to Colorado going into emergency rooms because they've, you know, they smoked too much weed or they've taken too much edibles. So you have certain things on the margins like that, but it's not happening a whole lot. And it's just see, you know, there's currently not a whole lot that people are seeing that's going on. So it's kind of, it's partially wait and see, but also I think even in 5 or 6 years, you're not going to see that much of a difference. You know, these changes just don't make as big of an effect as, you know, a lot of folks on either side say they do.
Here's the governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper, who had reservations about legalization originally, talking with Seth Meyers, saying, look, it's not like it wasn't there, you know, before legalization.
We see anecdotally less drug dealers around places where they used to hang out. And I think that there hasn't been a spike of young people suddenly, you know, using marijuana. It wasn't like it was impossible to find beforehand.
Yeah, I guess not. Alicia Wallace, you're there in Colorado. What's been toughest for Colorado here and what's been easiest to your mind? For example, traffic and road safety, has that changed? Or hospital visits, has that changed for overdose or drug-related problems? Has it changed better or worse?
Sure, sure. And as Christopher said, it's still early. It's still early. There's not a lot of that long-term data yet. So we're still trying to figure this out. When the state legalized adult use, it was forging a new path. It was doing something that hadn't ever been done before. So,
yeah.
So there's a huge learning curve here. In terms of some of the initial data that's come out, look at teen use. That's flat. Alcohol is still the drug of choice. Adult use is up in legal states, as Christopher has reported. The abuse and dependency rates, those have fallen a little bit. There's still a greater need for more health data in terms of the effects of marijuana on general health. And some of that research is ongoing. We're hearing a little bit come out every now and then. But in terms of some of the logistics of legalizing the adult use of the adult use here in Colorado, I think the biggest surprise first year was the consumption of edibles, and the state regulators weren't expecting the explosion in those rates. And so there was also the hospitalizations that resulted from that, which then spurred various packaging changes. There were some childproofing packages implemented, and the THC was lowered in some cases. I think back to last year, then came the issue of pesticides showing up, this kind of off-label pesticides. And it was actually my colleagues reporting, which then spurred further investigation by the state and some recalls on that front. And that's still an issue that folks are still wrapping their arms around. And then now there's been questions as to the potency issue, as to, I know that there were some, a ballot issue that was initially proposed, but it then was revoked. As to how much is too much in terms of levels of THC in various forms of pot, and so it's still a work in progress here.
I want to hear the arguments in just a moment, but lots of callers lined up to talk with the two of you. Kevin in Crandon, Wisconsin, you're on with Alicia and Christopher.
Hello. Yes. I just want to say that I'm for all the legalizations and medical marijuana. I live here in the state of Wisconsin, which is a state that has an extremely serious drinking problem. 12 of the 20 most heaviest drinking cities in the entire state, in the entire United States, are in Wisconsin, and yet people are still being turned into full-blown criminals over possession of small amounts of marijuana, which it's not right.
Do you think it'd be better off? I mean, I don't know about your numbers there, Kevin, but would Wisconsin be better off if they were stoned instead of drunk?
Yeah.
Why?
I've been smoking pot for 35 years. You bet. When you can convince me that smoking a marijuana cigarette is worse than drinking, than having a fifth of Jack Daniels in front of me and drinking it, then I'd be convinced. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Kevin, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. We'll looking at marijuana on the ballot in 9 states next month. Alicia, alcohol sales affected by legalization of pot in Colorado or not?
You know that it doesn't look like that. There's been a dramatic effect. Keep in mind we're home to a pretty big craft beer yeah. hub here, and mm-hmm. it's the Great American Beer Festival is kicking off today. There hasn't been too much of an effect on that. I don't think. I know a lot of folks and analysts have approached this question. There may be some consumers who are pulling from deciding not to go out to the bar and instead choosing to purchase some pot and smoke it at home with some friends. But it also is pulling a lot from what was happening already on the black market.
Alicia Wallace with the Denver Post, joining us from Colorado today. It's been great to have you. Good luck with it there, Alicia. Good luck with your work, and thank you so much for being with us.
Certainly. Thank you very much, Tom.
You bet. Christopher Ingram with the Washington Post. Stand by. I want to get the arguments in play here. With us right now, also from Denver, Colorado, is Mason Tvert, Director of Communications at the Marijuana Policy Project. They are for legalization. Mason, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And from San Diego, California, Kevin Sabet is here, President CEO of Smart Approaches to Marijuana, or SAM, Anti-Marijuana Legalization Group. Kevin, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Mason, first to you. Best arguments for legalizing after what we've seen, the experience we've gained in Colorado and beyond?
Well, yeah, every objective study on marijuana has confirmed it's far less harmful than alcohol. It's less toxic. It's less addictive. And it doesn't contribute to the types of violent crimes and other problems we see with alcohol. Colorado is now putting marijuana behind the counters of licensed businesses. Hundreds of millions of dollars of sales are taking place inside these very tightly controlled places instead of out on the street. The money is not going to cartels and criminals. Instead, we're generating tens of millions of dollars each year for schools and other projects in Colorado. And law enforcement's able to spend a bit more time focusing on serious crimes. So really, that's why we see most Coloradans still support this law, and really just a small fraction in a recent poll said that they would want to change course.
Kevin Sabet, you and your group say no to legalization. Why?
Well, we've seen this movie before, and we've had a massive industry, whether it's the tobacco industry for 100 years that lied to the American people about the harms of tobacco and was selling and promoting products to kids and advertising on television and radio and magazines and funding special interest groups, whether it was Purdue Pharma with OxyContin or the alcohol industry. And I don't know why we'd want to do this again for marijuana. You know, of course this is new. Of course we're starting to look at the data, but you know, I do take issue with some of the issues mentioned about that there's been no change. I mean, we've seen the reason why AAA of Southern California, for example, came out yesterday against legalization in California is because of the drug driving issue. We've seen a doubling of drug driving accidents due to marijuana in states like Washington. We've seen an increase in Colorado. And a group like AAA doesn't just come out for nothing unless it's a big issue. So I am worried about the sort of Wall Street and Silicon Valley interests that have taken over marijuana and are really the primary board members of both Mason's organization, but also the organizations funding the initiatives. And I gotta say, we mentioned alcohol. The alcohol industry wrote the initiative in Nevada. They get the first distribution licenses if marijuana is legal in Nevada. And we've never taken a penny from pharma or alcohol. And we're the primary group opposing and funding, although I don't know if Chris mentioned it, the opposition to legalization in all the states. So, look, we don't want to put people in prison. I agree.
How do you avoid that? A lot of people have gone to prison or at least been arrested and charged.
You can totally avoid it. You can remove criminal sanctions, or you can have civil fines, you can have warnings, you can do interventions and early treatment. By the way, alcohol sales, also for the record, are up about 3% in Colorado.
Silicon Valley, we'll come to that, Mason. Silicon Valley behind this? What do you mean?
Oh, absolutely.
Why?
Sean Parker, the co-founder of Facebook, the founder of Napster, is the main funder of this. The groups that are trying to create technology to basically vaporize, and in other words, have kids hide their marijuana use. You can't smell it if it's in a vaporizer, or you certainly can't smell it if it's in a gummy candy. These are the interests that are funding this. So this is about money, Tom. I mean, this is not about marijuana. Look, I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana in the privacy of their own home. As long as they don't get behind the wheel or whatever, it's on a weekend, they fall asleep, you know, more power to you.
Mason Tvert, is it about money, yeah. Mason? Is it all about
money?
Well,
it's really amusing because Kevin is part of a coalition that is made up of alcohol distributors in Arizona and Massachusetts.
Kevin, we'll come back to it.
Your organization didn't, but you're part of a coalition with Insys Therapeutics, which is the maker of fentanyl, which has killed thousands of people.
We'll come back and look at it, Mason. I promise you both, we'll come back and look at it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about marijuana on the ballot in 9 states in November, 4 for medical use, 5 for full recreational legalization, looking at the latest battle lines in the push for pot. Christopher Ingram is with us, Washington Post reporter with us today from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Covers this whole issue coast to coast. Kevin Sabet is with us from the group called Sam Smart Approaches to Marijuana. They're against legalization. Mason Tvert is with us in Denver, Colorado, Director of Communications at the Marijuana Policy Project. They are for legalization. You can join us this hour. What is this? Is this about personal freedom and taking pot out of the personal or the criminal realm? Is it about public health? Is marijuana a net good? Is it about fairness, justice? Does this sometimes just look like big business pushing for a new cash cow? Is more legal pot a good idea? Christopher, I'm going to come to you. And Kevin Mason, I know you've got arguments to make. You've got listeners as well. Leah in Nashville, Tennessee. Leah, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I guess I wanted to talk about how much I noticed alcohol negatively affecting like everyone at my school. I go to Belmont, but across the street is Vanderbilt. And I'm just kind of terrified by the incredible drinking culture there, but it's like way more accepted than smoking. And I, especially me and my friends who like kind of suffer from mental illness, the alcohol just wrecks us. Like we're super depressed and there's just a lot of anxiety that comes with drinking.
So are you saying take pot over booze because what, pot is abused more? What's your argument, Leo?
No, I'm saying that alcohol is so abused, but it's like way more acceptable. But I think it's so much more negative to the health of me and my friends and like our studies. And
yeah,
marijuana is like so much less accepted on campus. And I wish it wasn't, because I finally realized that I just can't take part in the drinking culture because it's just so bad for me. And
Leah, we've got it. I wish you well. We all wish you well. And let us pick it up. Kevin Sabet, pot better than booze?
Look, it's this weird false dichotomy between pot and alcohol. Both are bad for you. Alcohol's just legal because it's been culturally accepted among the vast majority of Western inhabitants since before the Old Testament. It's sort of an accident of history. 70% of people use it today. It's sort of here to stay. Marijuana, about 9% of Americans use it. But the studies about marijuana and mental illness, if you, again, don't take our word for it, the three of us, take, who all, by the way, have a point of view, obviously.
Yes.
Take the Journal of Lancet Psychiatry or the Harvard Medical folks who are all against the initiative there. The connection between marijuana, heavy marijuana use, and I think Chris and I would agree, look, we're not talking about occasional use as the main issue here. We're talking about people using daily, near daily. And that number has skyrocketed in the U.S. And the connection of daily, near daily users with psychosis and schizophrenia, there was a big rally in Sacramento just a few days ago with moms whose kids are suffering from mental illness due to the marijuana use.
Let me pick it up there, if I may. Christopher Ingram, Mason says that marijuana is less harmful than alcohol. And we're hearing that echoed from Leah in Nashville. Is that right? Is that clear? Is it conclusive from studies, Christopher? You're the reporter here.
I think if you look at it completely in isolation, I think most public health researchers agree if you were to wave a magic wand and eliminate all alcohol use in this country and turn it into marijuana use, I think on balance, the country would be better off. Marijuana is less linked to aggressive and violent behavior. It's less toxic. On the other hand, this doesn't mean, and Kevin kind of alluded to this, that it's completely safe and that there aren't any risks to it. Marijuana is a drug, just like any drug. It can be addictive. You can develop dependency. There are certain health problems and certain mental health problems linked to it. But on balance, marijuana, there seems to be less negative health impacts, both for individuals and society. And that was kind of one of the...
Let me take a call and bring it to you, Mason, there in Colorado. Kevin in Holliston, Massachusetts. You'll be right up, Mason. Kevin, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm 19 in Massachusetts. Of course, I smoke pot. I'm for the legalization of it. But I see the reservations that people have against it. Due to what you were talking about, mental health, I think that that's the number one issue with really any substances. It's not about pot. It's about getting people who have, real issues who are abusing drugs and substances to get them help. And I think it's common sense to legalize marijuana, but I don't think it's common sense to go ahead with this without the institutions in place to help people who need help.
Do you see people suffering from, in terms of mental health, from marijuana use, Kevin?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a big issue.
I'm talking to Kevin here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. yes, I do see it a little bit, just because they don't have help, I see kids in school who get overwhelmed, maybe they have some learning disabilities or just other issues at home where they can't get help, and they're going to abuse marijuana. And it's not about the weed. It comes down to the person. And I think we need to help people first, and that includes legalizing.
I really appreciate your call, Kevin. Mason Tvert in Colorado. How about it? There's Kevin. He smokes. He's for legalization, but he's worried that we don't have the supports in place to help people who get in trouble with it, mental health-wise.
Well, we actually do. It's not that marijuana is going to drop out of the sky on election day if it becomes legal. Marijuana is a widely available. Kevin says that alcohol is legal because it's widely accepted. Actually, alcohol is legal because we tried prohibition and it was an utter failure. And it was so widely accepted that people decided to end prohibition and regulate alcohol. The same is happening with marijuana, where we now see more than half of Americans by far agree marijuana prohibition has failed. They want to see it regulated. They want to see it taxed. They want to see this treated like a legal product where we can actually have honest conversations. There's Kevin talking about this mental health scare. We've seen an increase in rates of marijuana use over the last couple decades. We've seen just recently significant increases in rates of frequent marijuana use, yet there's no increase in rates of marijuana use disorders. There's no increase in rates of schizophrenia or psychosis. What we're seeing is a group of people who are fighting to keep marijuana illegal because they dislike it. They dislike the people who use it. If Kevin was truly concerned about public health, he would not want to go out there and scare adults away from using marijuana and punish them. He would want to talk about the fact that if they chose marijuana instead of alcohol, that would be a safer choice.
I don't want to punish
adults. But Kevin is in bed with the pharmaceutical companies and the alcohol companies. Oh, all contributing money to keep marijuana illegal. He's helping them protect their profits. And he has no interest in preventing teen alcohol use. He has no interest in addressing opioid abuse.
Let me just turn to that point. Kevin, this is raised twice here. Do you have contributions from the pharmaceutical or alcohol industry?
Will you condemn, Kevin, will you condemn the campaigns that you're
part of? I'm happy
to
condemn the pharmaceutical and alcohol companies. I've been working on this issue for 25 years, and I've actually been preventing, I've been preventing alcohol use and working towards, I helped write the President Obama's prescription drug abuse plan when I was his senior advisor to the drug czar for 3 years in that administration. So I sort of resent this idea that I'm out there wanting people
to use. So you're saying that these campaigns that earlier in the program...
I see this, Tom. I see this issue as big tobacco revisited, big pharma revisited. This is about a small group of people wanting to make money. And guess how many schools have been constructed in Colorado and Washington from the tax revenue of legalization? Zero. This is a
Kevin,
myth.
That is an absolutely ridiculous lie that our government rejects.
Do you have a school that's been constructed with marijuana money?
Yes. Kevin,
I'm going to take this to Christopher Ingram.
Can I please talk?
Yeah, you have, Mason. You guys are a little bit too much, actually. You've been around this bend maybe a couple too many times. Christopher, I want to ask you, on my caller's question about whether society is ready to handle the downside. All these things have downsides. Alcohol has downsides. Opioids certainly have downsides. We talked a lot about them on this show. Marijuana has its downside in addition to the benefits that Mason puts forward here. But are we ready as a society? Do we need to anticipate more use because of legalization? And are we ready to handle the problems that could come with that, Christopher?
I would be surprised if overall adult use didn't go up as, you know, marijuana use or legalization became more widespread. There are certainly going to be a certain number of problems with that. The thing you have to balance it against is that we have very real problems that we're experiencing right now as a result of our current policy. It's not like we're starting from a neutral stance and then going into something completely different. It's a cost benefit question, and there are trade offs in either way. Right now we have lots of arrests, we have lots of people in the criminal justice system. We have, we have people who have to go to the black market and have to support criminal enterprises just because of something they want to do. So there are negative trade-offs that we are experiencing right now. The question is, are the bad things we are experiencing now, we're trying to weigh those bad things that we know are happening right now against hypothetical bad things that could happen in the future. And that's a very difficult thing to do. And that's why we're seeing the spirited debate we're seeing today between, Kevin and Mason, because there are very serious disagreements on how best to do this and whether or not the current status quo is preferable to a more uncertain future.
Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, and Terrence. Terrence, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks, Tom, and thanks, guests. So I've been to two legalized states already, Colorado and Oregon.
Okay.
And I guess Colorado a couple years ago and Oregon this past summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to be a smoker when I was in college and high school, and once I became a father, I stopped on the regular, and there are very stark differences between the two states. Colorado was kind of like a frontier, free range, kind of buy what you want. And that probably has changed now. But then Oregon was very regulated, very educational on, they ask questions, are you a normal smoker? And how much milligrams of per this do you want? And they limit the amount of edibles you can buy a day to one. And they take your ID and put you into a system so you can't shop around to other local shops. And I think you can only get 7 grams a day as well, which is plenty for one day.
So that's pretty careful oversight. Christopher Ingram, how widespread is that kind of oversight in legalized settings?
Well, we're certainly seeing more of it, as the caller mentioned, in places like Oregon. And the other states who are looking at it now, they're debating whether or not, how far to go. It's for a lot of people, it's not a question of do we legalize, do we regulate, but the real burning issue is how. And even if you look at folks who are on two very different sides of the issue, yep, like Kevin and Mason, mm-hmm, they both agree that, we shouldn't be locking people up in jail, we shouldn't be doing this, we shouldn't be doing that. But the real big question is, what is the safest way forward? And, and even just getting aside from the nitty gritty of limits on edibles and stuff like that, there are a whole nother range of policy options that lawmakers could consider. You could have a situation like D.C. where people can grow it themselves, they can give it away to others, but they can't buy it. You can't go out to a store and buy it. There's just this tremendous middle ground that's really not being covered at all in the current debate, and partially because those middle ground options are a lot more complicated for your average voter and for anyone really to just to wrap their heads around.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig is calling. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Hi, just talked to police officers and firemen from, if they can remain anonymous, from Colorado, and they'll tell you all the horror stories about what marijuana is doing, all the problems with money. It's all about power, money, and votes. And by the way, alcohol is a carcinogen. It causes cancer.
But there's a lot of money and pot already, even without legalization. So the cops, what are you hearing on the legalized pot front? I mean, the money's there already. The problems are there already.
The trouble is they can't put the money in banks. There's robberies. It's kind of like a mafia-controlled, black market scenario.
Even when it's legal, you're saying, Craig?
Yeah, because the feds don't, it's illegal to put all that money in banks. So what do they do with it all?
Yeah, let us pick it up right there. Mason, what about it? I mean, if we get a lot of passage here, there's a lot of initiatives here, and if it's legalized in a bunch more states, what do you see as the problems? What needs to happen at the federal level if more states start making this legal, Mason? What's the tension there?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, fortunately, states are taking it upon themselves to move forward, and that's what's driving changes in opinions in Congress. Right now, we're seeing more support than ever among members of Congress for addressing these issues, whether it's about medical marijuana or adult use marijuana. One of the issues that they are most in tune on and most that we see the most support is addressing the banking issue. We do see a lot of these marijuana businesses have access to banks, but many more of them do not. And that's simply because of our federal marijuana laws. And as more states pass laws, like here in Colorado, we now have members of Congress who didn't support these laws when they passed, but now they say, okay, this is what the voters wanted. We now have marijuana being sold by these legitimate licensed businesses. We need to ensure that those businesses have access to adequate financial services.
Yeah.
It's a public safety issue.
Essex, Massachusetts. Brad, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to observe in my lifetime, I had some experience in East Africa and long ago, and my students at the school where I taught never took it. That's because it was considered to be foolish and a waste of time, and it's considered there in that society a privilege of old age. So for those that have worked their lives and time to relax and kick back, then it was fine. But youth never had a problem with it.
Well, what did you take from that, Brad? What's the lesson you took from that?
Well, the lesson is that it's a privilege of old age, and it shouldn't be taken by youth because it's a waste of time.
That's interesting. Mason, how about it? I mean, of course, there's booze and everything else out there, but do we really want to be a country that legalizes, you know, of course, people want recreation, they want to kick back, but, you know, what about all the rest, like the go-get-em part of a country? How's that helped by having legal marijuana out there?
Well, seeing as the last few presidents, members of our Supreme Court, more than half of Americans have used marijuana, I'd say that, you know, you're basically just buying into a stereotype that anyone who uses marijuana is a loser. I mean, imagine if you considered anyone who had a cocktail after work or a glass of wine with dinner a drunk. That's what you do when you suggest that it's going to somehow destroy humanity to simply let adults use marijuana when they relax or recreate. I mean, it's really just something that a lot of adults do. Most of them do it responsibly, just like they do with alcohol, except the potential harm to them and to those around them is far less.
Kevin, so, our time grows short. What do you say?
Well, look, sure, not everyone's a loser, but it increases the risk of these things happening. And the studies on IQ, on long-term learning, on memory, on productivity, it's like when you drive over the speed limit on the freeway, you're not guaranteed to get into an accident, but you increase your risk of that happening.
And nobody wants teens using marijuana, Kevin. That's not what we're doing here.
But why are they advertising? Wait, hold on. This is my question, then. If nobody wants teens, the industry does, because they're targeting.
The industry is not advertising to teens. There's rules against it, Kevin. Show me one incident.
If you don't mind, stop interrupting, Mason. I appreciate it.
We're going to have to stop the whole thing. I think we got it right there. Ladies and gentlemen, across the country, there's the sound of the marijuana debate right now. It is on the ballot next month. It may be just that hot and hairy in your state as well. We wish you luck wherever you come down. Mason Tvert with the Marijuana Policy Project, Kevin Sabet with Smart Approaches to Marijuana, thank you very much for being with us, and Christopher Ingram at the Washington Post. Thanks to you all three. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.